and pay attention to God's law, which is basically founded in don't hurt anybody. Love your brothers and sisters as you would yourself. There are definitely many laws that are listed within the criminal code or the various civil laws that are instituted throughout the land. They're in line with God's laws, and we do believe in obeying those. We are not radical to the point where saying no laws apply to us. The laws of God, the King James Bible, that is the foundation of Her Majesty's Code throughout the Commonwealth, are the laws that apply to us. Now, with reference to the de facto government, and many people have observed this, corruption has crept in within our government organizational areas to the point where many people have seen the courts acting in a corrupt fashion, they've seen the police acting in a corrupt fashion, and indeed the governments themselves. It's our belief that we are not to associate ourselves with a de facto government, because de facto quite literally means unlawful usurped authority taken over in a tyrannical assumption of power. Now, this isn't an assumption of mine. These are coming from the law dictionaries of the world that define the word de facto as being such. And this also comes from the Governor General's website, who defines herself as the de facto Governor General of Canada. This is also connected with the World Bank, which is Canada's creditor. Canada owes the World Bank about $750 billion, and they have a section in their world, or in their policy manual for the World Bank, and it's called Dealing with de facto Governments, and it defines de facto government as an unlawful usurped authority, as in a coup d'etat, a revolution, or an abrogation of the Constitution, which generally an abrogation means a removal if not being respected and honored. That word de facto is quite literally meaning unlawful. So when the first commandment of God says that we're not supposed to bow down to or submit to false gods, we take that quite literally, and since Caesar himself had declared himself to be God and the whole world shall worship him and pay him taxes, he set himself up as a false god. So when we have governments do the same, set themselves up as gods and making codes, rules, and regulations in addition to and contrary to God's law, which is a violation again of God's commandments of Deuteronomy 4 and 2 in the Bible that states that we are not to add to his law and not to take away from his law. Well, anybody that's ever been to a legislature or to the parliament sees that's all they do all day long is they're adding more and more laws to God's law. They're taking more and more laws away from God's law. Such is in abortion, which is the killing of unborn children, which is murder in our eyes, and such as in the homosexual marriages, which is a violation of God's commands. And indeed, the Westminster Confession of Faith from 1646, which is still valid law in this land, in section 24 in that particular law, it states that a lawful marriage is between a man and woman. The governments of this land have seen fit to ignore the laws of God and violate them. And this is basically why we do not respect them and not honor them. And they've even defined us as being persons, and most people would accept that and think that's quite radical not to say or accept that we're not persons. Well, we went right to the root of the word, which means a mask worn by a player on a stage, quite literally a legal fiction. And so we do not associate with those things because the Bible tells us that if we should show respect to persons, we shall be convinced of the law as transgressors. And over and over in the Bible it says God is no respecter of persons.
So isn't this, though, Minister Belanger, I'll be able to call you Minister Belanger?
Absolutely.
Isn't this just a simple way of being able to get around the laws?
Well, no. Some people say it's a getaway tactic. The only thing we're wishing to get away from is evil. We do not...
By refusing to do the driver's license thing, by refusing to pay off the interest on debt, why do you say that is a justified thing under your religion?
Well, again, in the Bible, with reference to the debt and interest, usury is a violation of God's law. And you have over 1 million Muslims in this country. That is the one main tenet of their faith. Usury is an exact violation of the law that they will not tolerate, and we are of the same faith and belief. We will not tolerate usury, which is the charging of interest.
I want to explore that one particular point with the minister in just a moment. And your calls, 1-877-332-TALK, 1-877-332-8255. My guest is Minister Edward J. Robin Belanger, the founder of the Church of the Ecumenical Redemption International. What do you think? Should the religion rise above the law? We'll talk more about that next on the Ralco Radio Network. More information.
This is Law on 650 CKLM and the filling in for Murray Wood on 980 CJME. He is back province-wide and next week right across the Ralco Radio Network. Right now we are talking with the Minister Edward J. Robin Boulanger, the founder of the Church of the Ecumenical Redemption International. The whole idea of paying debt, this was a battle that you had with TD Bank. I was reading on the Internet. There was the battle you had. You were not willing to pay interest to TD Bank. Am I correct on that?
That's correct. Once I found out that they had never loaned me any money, I was the one that created the fund, I decided to invoke the fraud upon me. And when I related those facts to them, which were later corroborated by the Treasury Board of Canada, they refused to accept my offering, and they proceeded against me in fraud, involving the Alberta courts that came to try and seize our property with an unsigned court order. I refused to accept their offer, and that at a further date, they came again when I was not at home, and they intimidated my wife to open the doors and allow them to gain entrance into the house, whereupon they gained possession by what they deemed permission. If somebody allows somebody to come into their home, you've given up possession of your home, quite literally. If you don't allow them to enter in, they can't come in, especially when they come with a piece of paper that doesn't have a judge's signature on it. It's just simply not valid.
Did you go to TD Bank for a loan and with the intent of not paying the interest?
No. When I went and got our original loan back in 1987, I had not founded my faith. I had not come under the word of the Lord at that time. And it was after that that I discovered my faith and took it up. And once I discovered this fraud, I just simply could not allow myself to participate in it anymore.
But you had entered into a contract with TD Bank.
Yes, if a contract is imposed upon you in deception, in other words, all the terms and the details of the contract are not made aware to you, and then that simply voids the contract, and this is internationally recognized.
What deception, sir?
The deception is if they tell you that they're loaning you money, when in actuality they're performing an exchange. You see, the banks in Canada have no money to loan you. Since 1933, there has been no gold to back the money. That means they had to use something else of substance to back that paper that's floating around. And what they chose to use was flesh and blood men and women. We are quite literally bonded from birth when the registries of birth are taken at the hospitals. These go to the Vital Statistics Department, who in turn turns them over to Treasury. And some people that have the older birth certificates can see on the back of their certificates it says a Treasury number in red. And that is deemed as a security item. It's printed on Canadian banknote paper, which is only allowed to be used for security or money. In other words, we're in bondage. And this goes back to Leviticus 25 in the Bible that tells us that the Israelites were to put all the men and women of the world that would not follow God's law into bondage. So this is quite literally what took place back in 1933 when the World Bank took over ownership of the corporation known as Canada, because Canada had gone bankrupt in 1931. The receivership took place in 1933. The World Bank came and took possession of all the gold, leaving nothing to give value for the paper. So quite naturally, the politicians said, well, what are we supposed to do to give value? And that was when the World Bank suggested and told them to put all the men and women in bondage. So when you go into a bank to get a loan, that banker, he needs your permission to create the funds. He puts a document in front of you, says $100,000 on the document. You sign at the bottom. Once you sign and your pen leaves the paper, it becomes known as a negotiable instrument with the face value of funds that's listed on the piece of paper. He then sends that to the Bank of Canada by law, to the according to the Bank Act. He must send it up the hill to the Bank of Canada. The Bank of Canada then refers to the account called the General Revenue Fund for Canada, and they have a number there listed for your name. And there's an account there that was formed and bonded for $8 million when you were born. And this is, you can find this in the regulations of the Canadian Ownership, Control, and Determination Act, which is a rewrite of the Foreign Investment Act of 1933.
Didn't the bottom line on this, though, was the fact that you had had entered into this agreement, and other than the fact that you had some sort of rebirth of some of whatever,
yeah.
You still had that agreement, and you call it fraudulent, but at the same time, they did lend you the money.
No, what I was trying to tell you is
well,
they didn't loan me anything. They performed an exchange.
Did you not get money?
No.
You received a zero?
I received paper that was based upon my own flesh. The value of that paper is based upon my flesh and your flesh and every other man or woman in this country. And that document that I just referred to you proves it in the regulations. It tells you the value of life, male and female. It tells you what you were bonded for at birth. And it also provides for a redemption program that goes along with the biblical standard of Leviticus 25, saying that every 49 years, you can redeem yourself from this bondage.
The minister... Edward J. Robin Belange. Gary wants to get on. So does Sylvia, Bob, and Karen, who supports him. And that's all coming up next on the Welcome Radio Network. The Ecumenical Redemption International is on the line with me right now. His name is Minister Edward J. Robin Belange. And we're ready for your calls. Let's say that a lot of you have been waiting very patiently, so I want to get to the calls here. Gary, in Regina, you've been listening to this conversation. What do you think?
This is a very interesting con, David. So far from the guests we've heard is a bit of argument by dictionary where he's taken and equivocated a number of meanings for a Latin phrase primarily used, common usage to mean one thing, and he's taken and narrowed it down just the legal definition. And then he's gone on and done a wee bit of creative interpretation of the financial underpinnings of Canada. I have a couple of questions for him.
He's on. Go ahead.
What makes you think your interpretation of the King James Bible is any better than anybody else's interpretation? And what makes you think the King James translation of the Greek and Latin is any better than any other translation?
Well, you bring up some very pertinent points. First of all, my interpretations are no better than anybody else's ability to read the English language. The words of which give us the information, and what I have observed for years is people take scripture out of context rather than cross-referencing the scripture to establish what is said is true. For instance, in the Bible it says we are to the Lord's sake, obey the ordinance of man, but in actuality, what it says, this is what it says in some particular translations. In the King James, for instance, and I'll get to why I use the King James, it says, we're to obey the ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. So initially, that makes people believe that we're supposed to obey all the ordinances of man. But when we go back to Deuteronomy, it says, do not add to my law, do not take away from my law, this I command you. So quite clearly, the only ordinances of man that we are to obey are the ones that are written for the Lord's sake, which would be thou shalt not kill, commit murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not covet or steal. These are in line with God's law. Any law that would be in addition to God's law, such as the gay marriage legislation, is simply something that does not apply to us, and we are not to obey, just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the Old Testament would not bow to King Nebuchadnezzar, the fire god.
But again, that's your interpretation, Minister.
Using the word. Other interpretations that you can take of almost anything in the Bible. I've got another question. Some people interpret that in the Bible, if your children disobey you, you can stone them to death. Now, what makes that interpretation any different than the interpretation that you're trying to take? Or I guess I should ask, do you follow that interpretation?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
That was one of the ordinances in the Old Testament that was washed away. The commandments, on the other hand, were never washed
by whom?
Pardon? By the blood of Christ.
By whom? I'm sorry.
By the blood of Christ, when he was put up on the cross at Calvary, the Old Testament laws that did not have the words, this shall be an ordinance forever, or were not part of the commandments, were washed away, such as the food laws. The food laws were washed away. All of the ordinances that didn't have forever, okay, means that they don't exist anymore. And since there was no provision in the commandments for the stoning to death of men and women for violating God's law. It's simply that those ordinances are gone and wasted away, and it is God who shall be the final judge.
You know what everybody believes, though? You're picking and choosing your scripture. You're translating it so that it will benefit you. I want to go to Al here because we've only got a few more moments. Al, go ahead.
This worthless paper that you keep talking about is merely a symbol or a metaphor for the goods and services that you can exchange it for. Your debit card or your Visa or MasterCard is a symbol that you can trade in, you can use to obtain actual real physical goods or services. So I don't know what you're talking about when you say it's worthless paper.
What I'm talking about is that Visa card that you're talking about involved in the world of commerce is quite literally your own value. You carry around that card that is basically saying, I can trade the value that has been used by the world bankers as substance. They have been trading you on the stock exchange ever since you were born. And that value, now when you carry around your card, you get to access your own value. That's what's used to give value to the money in this country. There is no gold as a substance to give value to the paper.
Why? Okay, then, you know, why is gold so important?
This was used as a standard for centuries to give value to paper. When the goldsmiths, back in about the 16th and the 17th century, Mr. Rothschild, being one of the first families to start doing this, realized after a while that the amount of gold that they had in their vaults, and they were issuing pieces of paper so that people didn't have to carry around all this gold, so they'd go and exchange and buy things. Pretty soon the goldsmiths began to realize nobody was coming back to get their gold. They continually used the paper. So instead of giving them dollar-for-dollar value, an ounce of gold, an ounce worth of paper value, they increased it, and they started doing what's called fractional reserve banking. In other words, they've got a pound of gold in the bank, but they quite literally lend out 100 pounds worth of paper gold, which is literally known as fraud. But this is an international practice that has been undertaken by the bank for centuries.
If you
were to do that, you'd be charged with fraud.
We're running out of time. I've got to tell you how I feel about this. And there's one other thing I want to say before I let you go as well.
Certainly.
Now, we have the case in Saskatoon, and Karen is on the line right now. Karen is the woman who was dragged out of the courtroom, kicking and screaming, as we've read in the media reports, on a charge of child abduction. And she does want to get on the line and speak, but the judge has placed a publication ban on this. And I know she says she only wants to speak about what you're talking about, but we can't risk that. And I know you are going to degrade us for that, because, again, I'm following the law of the land on this one instead of the law of the King James Version of the Bible. So just, Karen, so you understand, we're not going to be able to do that, because I am facing legal problems, and our whole company is facing legal problems at that point. You, sir, though, have picked and chosen the scriptures that will work for you. You do not take responsibility. She is facing a charge of child abduction and refuses to recognize the court, and therefore is going to create whatever problems that is going to create in this one particular case. And you're backing that, and it's a charge as serious as child abduction. And you're on the air today, and I've given you lots of time to talk about it, and you've done very well in that. Justifying, though, sir, no authority in the courts on a case of child abduction goes beyond what I believe to be even the cultish of thoughts.
Yeah, well, one must give consideration to the child. The primary motive is to defend the child. And in Karen's circumstance, she was under the impression that her children were in danger. So
why wouldn't she let the courts decide that?
Because she recognizes the courts are de facto and corrupt and cannot be trusted.
Minister Belongia, thank you for your time.
God bless you.
His name is Minister Edward J. Robin Belongia. Agree or disagree with me for putting him on the air? I think we should hear about these kinds of organizations so that we can understand where they're coming from. And at times, I think it helps us understand where we're coming from as well and where we are in society. The highways. Good? Bad? Your call is on the highways next.